lots of times the teams are afraid of asking for opinions, for a discussion with the senior management, while as the senior management actually would like to be.
Hi everybody and welcome to Inno Podcast. My name is Khalil Bauer, head of SBAS Lab, Swiss Post Innovation Lab. Observe, understand, point of view, ideate and prototype. These are the core steps of design thinking and approach. You learned about it in episode number 9. If you want to implement such a way of working in large engineering companies, well, that takes some time. What can you do right? What should you try? And what probably will not work? Well, my today's guest knows a lot about that. Lea M. Übersteeg and her team drive design thinking at GF, the well-known Swiss international pipe system company. And she will share her major learnings from the last 3 years at GF with you. Lea worked before GF at Credit Suisse as a strategic business project manager. She did her BA in Lucerne and social and communication science and her master in management, organization and cultural theory at St. Gallen University. What are your experiences in your company? Please write us a message. We are really curious to hear more from your learnings and maybe we'll have an episode with you as well. Till then, we will do more research on various topics, relax a bit, reflect on what we as a podcast team achieved, and we will be back in September with a new season. One final thought. All of what we achieved is because of you. Yes, you. You listened, you subscribed, you gave us feedback, you shared episodes in your network. We love that. And we do really appreciate that, and we are glad to have you with us. Please keep on doing that. You will need your input, thoughts, and energy more than ever. But first, enjoy the summer, and now enjoy this episode with Lea.
Hi, Lea. Thanks for joining me today.
Hi, Khalil. Very nice to be here.
And thanks again for recording this second time, the first time my MacBook messed up. So that's why we have to do this again. Nevertheless, I appreciate your time. The first time we started with one specific question about which design thinking case, maybe it's internally at GF or somewhere else, about which design thinking case do you still get very, very excited?
Let's start then with a concrete case. I was thinking about one concrete example that the team is currently doing in our organization. It's a piping solution for chemical treatments. So what you can imagine, if you're working in chemical processing, there's a lot of dangerous, hazardous liquids in the system. And so you need to ensure that actually the liquids, in case the pipe bursts, is still saved. And this team was working in the last few months since last year on a design thinking project, where despite the COVID situation, the team had the chance to talk to several of our customers globally in all the different regions in Europe, but also in Asia. And with the know-how, they came back and actually developed a more holistic solution offering for our customers. And what I'm got pretty excited about is the business case just passed this week. So the team was actually able to work on a less complicated system for the users, especially for the installers and the workers on the ground, while coming up with a new and more innovative solution that also excited our management team.
Was it the one last week on Monday where we planned our recording and then we had to postpone?
Exactly.
Ah, okay, cool. Congrats on that. So founded in 1802, GF operates in 34 countries with 137 entities. I have to read that up. 59 manufacturing facilities and has about 14,000 employees and an annual revenue of 3.2 billion Swiss francs. And as you already mentioned, Georg Fischer, GF, the Vision Piping System produces pipes, transporting flues and gas. And it's the biggest division with 1.7 billion annual revenue in 2020 and about 7,000 employees. So as far as I can see, I would think everything's pretty good and there is no need to change anything or do stuff like design thinking. So why are you there? Why does a design thinking team exist at GF?
Very good question. I think the design thinking team at GF, in a nutshell, is working on additional value creation. So thinking mainly about adjacent innovation opportunities that are maybe not yet in the core business, which, as you said, is really strong and is going super well on the markets. And at the same time, it's also a very ongoing culture transformation, where it's about bringing the divisions and also the business units closer together to have interdisciplinary teams across the different departments working on new ideas, and also going into that iterative learning approach, just as you said, with the recording we're doing here for the second time, to also embrace a new way of approaching things, learning from maybe also failures from projects that didn't go well. So I think that's why the design thinking team is there at Piping Systems. It's to bring in new ideas on creating value for the customers, but also creating value for the organization by thinking differently and bringing other perspectives in.
Do you have an idea, or can you share a story? Why or what exactly probably happened that the top management, the executive board of GF, decided that we might need people who are experts in design thinking, who are experts in creating value in a different way for customers, but also for the organization? What did they observe, or what did they experience that made them, hey, we need to go this different way?
There's one very concrete example where our former CEO, now our president of the board, Yves Serra, was working with IDEO, a pretty well-known design company in the US. And he was working with them on a very specific project. It was about flame retardancy of piping systems. So you can imagine you have everything in the wall and you have regulations where government tells our customers, know what happens in case of fire, how resistant your materials need to be. And in that project, he had a major aha moment, which was about our customers don't need just a beautiful technology and a beautiful solution to keep your pipes safe of fire forever, no, for hours, for days. But the customers need to have that peace in mind that if something happens, they have enough time to alarm, for example, the firefighters. So it was really down to understanding the real need of the customers and not just the technology solution that we as GF could design. And that was one of these major moments where in the management team, this customer-centric and especially also human-centered approach made a huge impact in the thinking. As our company is very technology-driven, we're super proud of all the products that we have, and rightfully so. It brings an additional layer of gaining the perspective of the customers to even better serve them with the solutions that we have, and actually starting with their problems and not the technology solutions that we think the customer needs to have.
Can you probably also share some figures, some numbers about how much is the difference of the business value when you compare one, let's say, classical project approach of developing some kind of update or new product or service or whatever, compared to one which is specifically made by you or your team with a design thinking approach?
I cannot give you any numbers. I think that's something we're still working on, to be very frank. Also there, it's not it's on our key strength to show quantitative figures of the work we do. I think what's for me the more important value is kind of the qualitative impact that the work has. And I can maybe give you an example of a managing director who was actually part of a customer interview back in Malaysia 2 years ago, where he saw the difference in approaching the customer and the project by actually sitting there, being part of the interview, being part of the download sessions. And based on that, decisions were made differently, because it was such an other experience versus the classical project approach, that actually the buy-in and also the commitment was much earlier there. I think that's really the biggest problem as well, no? coming down to your question, I can't give you any numbers. So I cannot give you a return on investment on the projects we do, but more a collection of stories that are showing how decisions are made differently or projects and products went differently to the market with a happier or better buy-in from the customers. So yeah, maybe that's definitely something I...
Let's stick to the example. What made this managing director?
Yeah.
What made him, joining you for this interview and for this download session? It's not very obvious to do that, especially mm-hmm. not for senior management.
Mm-hmm. I think it's really the design on how we try to set up this project. So having this involve your stakeholders early and often approach in the projects while already setting it up and already kind of engaging them.
Involve them early and often?
Yes.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Cool.
It's, I think that really does make a big difference. What we are also telling our project teams that our management only has so much attention span, right? They have so many things they need to decide. By keeping them informed about the major steps you're taking, the major decisions, it's also easier for them to give you a direction or a guidance. And that was the same with the managing director in Malaysia. It was inviting him. So since I was traveling from Switzerland, I think that's a bit the additional legitimation, no? Like, yeah, I'm already here, so please join us, have a look. But he was also very passionate. He kept on asking, what can I do to support the team? So the question was really simple. It's like, be involved and have a part. And I think that's my the major lesson to learn. Lots of times the teams are afraid of asking for opinions, for a discussion with the senior management, while as the senior management actually would like to be, at least not in the nitty-gritty details, but on a higher level, would like to be more involved. So it's also an approach on the design thinking team side to say, okay, who are the stakeholders that need to be involved early and often to really drive the project into a better direction? Also by stopping things. Also they are daring to say we would propose to stop a certain project. I think that's also one of the tasks that we have.
When you say involve the management as often and as early as possible, especially when we're talking about the major steps moving forward, just to give at least some kind of glimpse, how much time are we talking about? Is it about every week? Is it just, I don't know, twice a month? Is it every day? How much time, especially in the early phase, do you guys involve senior management?
I can give you another example from a project around water management in China, where we have involved our managing director from Asia into our sprint week that we had to kick off the project. So he participated in the beginning of the sprint session, was there for 3-4 hours, gave also a bit his insights, and then he came back again around 3-4 hours by the end. So we're not talking about spending every week 10 hours with the team, but much more on major milestones that we have to get the feedback in. So it's much more monthly involvement for a few hours versus in the past the teams will be working until M3, which is the milestone 3 in the innovation process, is the go or no go for a project, and that could easily take a year or 2 years before the team feels ready to present, and the stakeholders or senior management didn't get any insights until that point. And naturally, there were a lot of questions at that point. So it's maybe going from not involving them until the first time you talk about the project to having a few hours every month to make sure that the teams are working aligned.
I could imagine that might be a huge difference if you involve them, I don't know, every week for half an hour or probably once a month, but then for really a couple of hours, which makes a huge difference, I would imagine.
It always depends on the stakeholders, again, as well, right? I think there are some people that have a lot of, I mean, there's a lot of things on the agenda, so it's really hard to say, okay, you have a fixed slot every 3 hours, every month. Again, same point, why not asking? I think that's what I've, again, learned. Now we're setting up a next project, and it's, again, really engaging with the business unit head to figure out what's the right challenge, how to frame it. Lesson learned. I mean, people like to be involved if it's strategically relevant for them. So taking that time is very important.
Okay, so let's take one step deeper into your team, into what you do. How do you guys decide on which topics you will need to work?
So currently at the GF Piping Systems, we're a rather small team. So the design thinking team is 3 to 4 people, including me. And we are in charge of the entire front-end innovation process, which doesn't mean that we do all the projects. So one part of our job is to ensure that the teams get the right materials, the right kind of guidance around the innovation process, what's needed on different milestones. That's one part of our job. And then the second part is really working on the projects. But that means maybe having one, maximum two projects running at the same time, where we look at the strategic landscape of potential ideas, also do a first triage, what's anyway going to happen, for example, core innovation topics, where is a white spot which is important for the organization but is not yet taken up on. So currently we work on the topic of sustainability to really make that into business value for our customers and for us as GF as well, where we then handpick a few things. And the third point, you mentioned it just before, we have a lot of, I would call, design thinking practitioner in the organizations that work, but really decentralized at the moment, with the design thinking mentality in their respective jobs. So whether it's digital transformation on the e-business side or the colleagues in sales enablement, there is more and more people that we hire that bring the capabilities into the organization and naturally do it. So there was one example in HR where our colleagues there use the design thinking toolbox, the materials we give them for any kind of project, new onboarding or a new offering into talent development. And just once in a while, by chance, I learned that they actually are applying that human-centered methodology, but it's not by us or it's not driven through us. But sometimes it's maybe quick check-ins, like, hey, Leah, half an hour, quick time. Look, that's how we did it. Is anything missing? So I think it's really these different levels that the team works with the little resources that we have.
Do you think you need to bring them together from time to time? Or do you think you just let them work, they do what they can do best, and that's okay as well?
Yes and no. I think yes, for sure. So last time, I didn't do it last year because there was the COVID. But you can't blame everything on COVID. So last time I did a design thinking practitioner days, and that was 2 years back, where we invited all different colleagues from, also from abroad. There were a few colleagues from the States coming over to really, as you say, do that share back, do that discussion or what goes well, what are the frustrations, how can we improve. And we've taken that level now currently on the digital sphere. So,
how many people does it involve?
I would say, I mean, passively, or people that are aware that they have the skills and apply it, maybe 200-300 across all the different divisions. And then back in piping systems, I would say it's maybe around 30-40 people in the different departments. And that's what we do then on that level now on piping systems. It's engaging with our innovation leads in the areas, supporting them really on project support. And then on the other side, that's the no. It's not only about engaging kind of the community, but really helping them on very concrete projects. So I think that's also where the need came from the organization. It's great to have a Yammer group where you can engage, or it's great to have your project teams where you can reflect. What we did last year with several projects, we got them together once a month to reflect on what went well. What they also need, mainly is then also the support on the projects and, okay, what's going on? How should I set it up differently? Which we also try to cover. So yes, it's definitely needed, but it needs to happen on several levels and not just on the Big Bang conference every year.
It's true. I was wondering about the number because, for example, with Christina Taylor, the former head of human-centered design at Swisscom, I think in one of her keynotes, I heard the number of about 400 or 500 trained people in human-centered design, which is probably around about the same number that you guys have. And okay, Swisscom and GF are probably way different, but at least from the number of employees, it's quite similar. And I think she mentioned that to have about just about a couple of percent might make a huge difference. That's why I think she spent quite some time on really setting up these trainings and sending people to Berlin or to the West Coast or whatever to really train people in this ability. But if you do it your way, like just hiring people who already can that, it's slightly different, but nevertheless, the outcome could, there's potential that the outcome might be the same. That's why I wondered if it makes sense.
I think it needs both. So maybe looking back at my time at GF Corporate, where I started within the company, we went all around the globe to train people. So we had officially trained more than 1,500 people on the methods of design thinking. We went there, had a look at their projects. And I think that's very important to create awareness. At the next stage, in the learning journey, understanding that there is a need to applying in your project, I guess that's where I see currently the biggest difference. Also, to say we trained in the awareness, which never stops again, right? A mindset is something, or behavior or something, you need to train consistently. But the second wave to train people in really doing it, without even thinking about it, is just as important for me for a long-term change within an organization.
If you think one step, even probably one step more forward, what might be the next steps in order to be, let's say, more successful with this approach inside the organization, probably even going that far that someday you on your own decides we don't need the specific design thinking team anymore because it's already part of our DNA now.
Mm-hmm. It's funny because that's always what I'm saying. I wish that one day our team in this sense where we now is not needed anymore. And I think what it needs to get there is still consistently having concrete project outcome where you really show how a project is done very differently if you really go into all the different steps, which is sometimes thinking about the confirmation bias, that you're willing to go and really validate your prototypes and not just go out there and tell, hey, you like my prototype, right? So I think it's one thing that we still need to have more very concrete projects on how, what you said before, difference with human-centered methodology without, and also evolving our approach. And this is what we currently are doing with coming from human-centered to planet-centric design, where we're actually adding an additional layer into our innovation process or our innovation mindset by taking in the planet also as a stakeholder.
And really, the planet, Earth,
Mother Earth, as you're smiling here. Yeah, it sounds a very philosophical. And
no, it's okay. Makes sense.
And this is really where I'm seeing, as you said, right? Will there be a day that the team is not needed anymore? There will be always elements that you need to take into account when innovating. And as long as there is additional things, I think we can also evolve with the organization. So thinking now on innovation and sustainability, that's something that we bring in now to say, okay, our teams should not only look at technology, the customer and business, but also considering the sustainability impact that innovation has on the ground. So that's where we are training, again, our people in projects by doing the project leads in thinking that way and providing materials, providing guidance in that direction.
For example, what kind of material?
There is one very simple template that you can just use the business model canvas and add in green letters the word sustainable business model canvas, and you add in the costs and kind of revenue streams, you add two additional layers, so you can Google it or we can share it afterwards.
We will put it in the show notes, definitely.
With the listeners, to just create that awareness. Or when you have a stakeholder map, which we did with our teams in China, you add an additional layer in the stakeholder map that's really the planetary impact on society and on our environment. So it's additional tools to, again, work on the mindset that our teams, we also have a sustainability assessment now coming up, which my team member Andy Brunner, he designed. It's thinking, start thinking in another way. And I think that's also where design thinking, you know, first started. It's bringing another perspective and not just looking at the technology, for example. So if this task is done, maybe one day we are really not needed anymore.
Probably I'm already going too deep, but nevertheless, I'm really, really curious. You have the existing business and you have a layer on innovation and trying to discuss and figure out with the organization and with project teams, okay, how can we develop this? How can we plan and organize our work in this project towards a more human-centric approach? So I would imagine that this is, especially for a very technological and engineering company, this is quite a step. That's not easy done. So then you have also but a second layer over it. So like, let's put the issue of planet Earth just next to it because it's important as well. I don't know why, but I would imagine that people are like, yeah, sure, now we don't do that. Did something like that happen?
I think luckily we do have a very strong strategy 2025 supporting this effort. So it's not just us coming with say, oh, that's the next trend. Yoo-hoo, mm-hmm. Let's go for it. But you do see kind of one, a pull from our customers. I think that's where, again, where it's coming from. So it's still human-centered, still customer-centered, that our customers are more and more concretely asking for support on the sustainability side. So we are actually also going to lose tenders. We're going to lose projects if sustainability regulations are not met that are, for example, now in the EU coming more and more. So it's one thing that we as a company, you've maybe seen it, we were named by the Wall Street Journal as number 9 most sustainable company on the earth. Surprisingly,
congrats, cool.
Great thing. So one part is really the strategy part where we're really saying that should be a pillar of our business to also have the sustainability aspect and then the customer pull to say, hey guys, we really need your help on making sustainability tangible. And coming with that to our project teams, that's much easier to argue than to say, oh, let's do something nice for our planet versus there is a need from the market. There is a need also from a strategic direction. And we're here to help you make that tangible.
And they do accept that.
I think it really depends, again, on how you frame it. Mm-hmm. Like same with design thinking. If you come and say, hey, you're stupid because you're not applying a persona. I mean, how idiotic is that? Or a customer journey. You don't even know what a customer journey is. People will be definitely offended. But if you come and say, hey, by the way, we want to help you to grow your business, and we do have some elements on how we approach things differently. So, A, we talk to customers, we really listen, we have some open several why questions, have a look on how we do it. We do it together, by the way, or talking to our sales colleagues to say, okay, we want to focus on what's important for your customer. And then you pull in the tools and you pull in the process. It's a very different approach. And I would say that's exactly the same for human-centered and planet-centric design.
And to be honest, it's basically using the human-centered approach exactly in your own work. So not about only customers, but start where your organization, your colleague currently are. And probably just don't be a jackass.
I think it's interesting. There was a nice anecdote from a colleague that just got retired last year. So he'd been with the company for more than 40 years.
Wow.
And he came to me, I think it was last year, after the first wave of COVID. And he asked me, it's like, hey, I've seen there is something like Mural and I would like to do a workshop. Can you just kind of show me how it works? And I said, together with him remotely for sure over Teams and spend half an hour on thinking on how to apply or how to organize his project around the digital tools that we have nowadays. And I think that's exactly the same again with innovation, no? Coming and saying, oh, we're the cool kids from the block. Let me now tell you how it works really. Or to start and say, hey, you have 40 years of experience and that's great. How can I help you to make your job even better? I think that's the success long-term of the innovation team at GF and probably also in other companies to sustain even in times of crisis.
Very true, but I can imagine, and it also happened and probably still happens to me as well, that sometimes this innovation unit people behaves like we're the new kids from the block and we know how to do it with a probably slightly different approach and then wondering why things don't move that quickly forward than expected. But this is an easy one because you can always blame the old conservative organization and not yourself, which was way easier. Okay. I get that. We got a little bit philosophical, but that's okay. I have to look at our time, and I would like to take a step for our final round. I got three questions for the end. What's your favorite design thinking source?
My favorite design thinking source. So the last one I've just recently used is the service Design Thinking Doing. You just have to type it actually exactly like that. Design Thinking, Service Design Thinking Doing. And what I really like there is you have everything open and available. There is a book as well, but you can just download some of the tools that are on the site. And what I've realized is I sometimes also just start Googling something that I'm looking for. No, for example, sustainable business model canvas. And then there is always new sources popping up. So that was for me also quite amazing, kind of how the exponential curve also occurred in the offering of some tools. So that, my second answer to that is just Google what you're looking for.
Makes quite a lot of sense. I would have not the idea that you need to Google sustainable business model canvas, but I will do now. Currently, what do you try to learn?
There's two things that I'm currently trying to learn. So maybe on the private side, I've taken a course in improvisation theater, where you really learn all this basic mindset of innovation, so to say.
In Zurich?
Exactly, in Zurich. An und für sich, highly recommended. I do some advertisement here as well. It's really about the mindset that you need to bring in a stage where you don't know what happens next. Very similar to an innovation mindset. You have to listen to each other. You have to connect the dots. There is some really nice learnings out of being on the stage with another person. It's the same, no? As you said, I mean, you can be on the stage and say, oh, am I the cool kid on the block? And or you listen to your counterpart, and that's where then the story grows and becomes 1 + 1 = 3 all of a sudden, because you have new ideas. And that's also what we try to do in work. We had a storytelling for change course that we did, where it was all about, you know, coming in front of an audience, a stage similar to a TEDx event. And one practice that we had to do is telling fairy tales to each other using dramatic voices. So that was all of us really going beyond the comfort zone of the team. And the current theme of the training we're doing right now this week is biases. So what I mentioned before, we do an innovation mindset mastery, and the task for this week specifically is looking at biases that maybe arouse in private but also in workspace. As I said, the confirmation bias, if I know that this project has to happen, am I really willing to still stay open to impact from the other sides, and what do I do with it? So yeah, it's a never-ending journey, I would say.
At the Espace Lab entrance, we reserved some space for you. Which quote might we note there?
I'm very curious if it's the same sentence still as in the first recording. Probably not, but probably it is. I think what strikes me still most about innovation is that listening part. So you really, only when you stop talking, you can start listening. And I think that's pretty telling. When you say, only when you stop talking, there is a blank. And all of a sudden in this blank, your counterpart, whether it's your customer, your stakeholder, they can start talking. So that's when you start listening and gathering really more information that goes maybe a few layers further down.
Only when you stop talking, you start listening. Liam Obersteg, thanks a lot again.
Very welcome.